All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the October 25th, 2024 Santa Ana Water Board meeting. We are meeting in person and via Zoom, and this meeting is being webcast and recorded. For those who have completed a virtual speaker card for the Zoom, you will be on mute and your camera turned off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off, and you can remain in the Zoom meeting or exit the meeting at that time. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. I'll ask the board members to please introduce themselves, and I'll start with Al Lopez, board member Lopez, to my right.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Al Lopez. I'm the former mayor of City of Corona and also a longtime member of the Board of Directors for Western Municipal Water District in Riverside County.
Board member Alvarado.
Good morning, everyone. Gloria Alvarado, resident of Santa Ana, and it's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Board member Clark.
Good morning, everyone. Letitia Clark, resident of the city of Tustin and also currently serving on the Tustin City Council. Good to be with you.
And board member Rue.
Good morning, I'm Bill Rue. I am a council member of the city of Montclair, where I've served since 98. And prior to that, I was on the Monte Vista Water District for about 15 years.
And Vice Chair Skender.
Good morning, everybody. To those of you both here and present and also viewing on online, my name is John Scandura. I'm a 30-year resident of Huntington Beach. It's also great to be back here in the Inland Empire, here in Chino. My mother grew up not far from here in Chino, and I grew up in Ontario, so it's great to be back here.
Welcome. And my name is Chris Murray. I have the honor of serving as chair of this distinguished board and agency. I'm a former mayor pro tem and councilwoman in the city of Anaheim, and I, during that time, had the incredible honor of serving 5 years as a Metropolitan Water District board member as well. It's a pleasure to join all of you today. I'd like to quickly thank the Inland Empire, the Inland Empire Utilities Agency for hosting us today. This facility is so beautiful. We appreciate you welcoming us into your home and hope everybody has a chance to walk around and enjoy the beautiful gardens and the scenery as well. With that, we'll get started. We do have a quorum, so we will begin the meeting. Do we just move directly to item two at this point? Is that fine? Okay. So item two is our public forum. Any person may address the Santa Ana Water Board on any matter within the board's jurisdiction, provided that the matter does not appear elsewhere on the agenda and has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda or is not otherwise pending before the board. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the meeting is the item is considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes. Jessica, do we have any speaker cards at this time?
No, there are not.
Okay. With that, we'll move on to item three, which is our State Water Resources Control Board liaison report. I'd like to introduce our State Water Resources Control Board member, Didi Diamo, who will provide an update on the State Water Resources Control Board. Didi?
Madam Chair, it looks like Didi is not currently on Zoom yet. She may be running a little late.
Okay, then we'll just hold off on item three, and we will move on to item four. We'll come back to that when she is available. So item four, I'd like to introduce Jane Joy, who will provide an update on our racial equity activities.
Oh, good morning. I'm proud to announce that we have completed our racial equity action plan, and we have successfully posted it to a web page. We created a web page, and Dan's going to show us what that looks like. And so this web page It includes a description of what we're doing at the Santa Ana Regional Water Board for racial equity. And then it's if you can scroll up just a little bit, it's going to include the information. So this is the beginning of our site to go for as things develop. We have a description of what the action plan does. We have links to our resolution, to our action plan. We have links to a lot of the state programs and some of their programs that we've been working closely with. And as events come up, we will we'll use this web page for announcements, for updates, for news releases. We've included a map, a simple map that kind of just describes where the location is. So we're really proud of it. Our IT staff are just extraordinary. They did a great job. But again, this is a tool that we've used. We actually sent it out to our what's called a Gov delivery list. There's a public information list. It's a couple hundred people. I did get a phone call from a school in Claremont, Pomona. They're wanting to work with us and have their students help with our racial equity projects. So yeah, that just happened. So it's very exciting. So we're making some connections. Yeah, it's the Pomona, it's Pomona University. It's in Claremont. Yes, and they talked that they might come today, but I don't know if they're here. I had a good conversation with, her name's Heather Williams, and she's one of the professors there. So I was excited that, and I asked her, how did you find us? And the other thing about the website, which is a nice tool too, is we'll be able to see how many people are visiting it. We can determine, you know, if our outreach is being effective. And we're continuing to pursue other ways to reach out. Another item on racial equity, which I wanted to bring up, is through our planning group, we just prepared a tribal letter to, I think it's about 30 tribes, where we're asking them to provide input on the tribal beneficial uses. So these tribal beneficial uses have been written and prepared for by the State Water Resources Board, and we want to incorporate them into our basin plan. So there's like two steps. We want to include them as a beneficial use in our basin plan, and then from there we'll take and look at the watershed and work with the tribes to determine which watersheds should have that beneficial use. And so we've got a little bit of work to do, but we'll get it start. We're getting it started, and we're moving that forward. So we're excited to see some of that happening. And that's all I really had to present today. I don't know if there's any questions.
Any questions from the board? Vice Chair?
I was just going to add a comment that Pomona College is one of the most selective schools in the entire United States. So, we're really going to be working with some really top-notch students on this. So it's very much an honor and privilege for them to approach us about this.
Nice.
Well said. Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for the website being activated so quickly and the team who worked on that. That's fantastic.
Dan and Don.
Wave in the back, yes. Thank you.
They're amazing.
We do have an incredible team here at our agency, so thank you. Okay, great. Thank you for that and for that update. Just checking really quick to see if Dee Dee's with us. Is she? Okay, great. Then we'll move back to item three and get receive an update from the State Water Resources Control Board member, Dee Dee Diamo, who will provide an update on the state activities. Dee Dee, the floor is yours.
Good morning. I apologize for being late. We're busy working on an upcoming announcement on Bay Delta. So I can't say much right now, but will suggest that you stay tuned. There'll be some information being posted later today on that. Switching gears here. I've been busy working on that this morning. So pulling up my notes here. First item that I want to update you on is small municipal stormwater permit. This summer, our staff did release an informal draft of the updated general permit for small municipal stormwater entities and conducted two workshops in September, and the public comment period closed on October 4th. And at this point, staff is going to be doing kind of a high level response to comments and then make revisions as a result of that, and then release a draft at that point, starting off the formal regulatory process. I've been updating you on the water supply strategy, focusing on some of the areas in particular of particular interest to you all, which I'm going to call out two of them, ocean desal and recycled water. So on ocean desal, on September 12th, our staff issued a public notice of opportunity to comment on the proposed amendments to the seawater desal provisions of the water quality control plan for ocean waters, which is, you know, the proposed project, and held a public scoping meeting to receive input and recommendations on this. And then on this coming Monday, from 1 to 4, there's a public scoping meeting. And then 12 noon on November 13th is the deadline for public comment. And participants can provide oral comments either in person or Zoom. And the information is posted on our website. And then for the for recycled water, our Division of Water Quality is preparing to present an informational item before our board on November 5th to share results of the 2023 volumetric annual report of wastewater and recycled water in California. And what we're seeing here is staff will be sharing progress toward the statewide water supply strategy goals and highlight the emerging relationship between the trends of recycled water use and also precipitation trends and how that impacts it. And what we're, of course, highlighting is our goal to get to 800,000 acre feet of water, recycled water use per year by 2030 and 1.8 million by 2040. We know that those are, we think we're going to be able to hit the 800, but the 1.8 is going to be a challenge. And so it's really important that we, as a state board, work together with regional boards to see, you know, what can be done in order to improve those conditions and streamline the process. On Delta Conveyance, on September, this is the project that's before us that we've assigned to our Office of Administrative Hearings. And sorry, I'm getting a call, and so my notes just disappeared on my computer. One second here. All right, sorry for that. For the Delta Conveyance project that we've assigned to our Office of Administrative Hearings, there was an important pre-hearing conference that was held on October 17th. And more information can be found on the project webpage. Without getting into details, which I'm not able to do anyway because of ex parte restrictions, I'll just say that the subject of that pre-hearing conference was some important procedural decisions that are under consideration by the Administrative Hearing Office. And so if that's a project that you're wanting to follow closely, I would suggest keeping track on the webpage. On outdoor water conservation, on July 3rd, our board approved, as you all know, outdoor water conservation regulations for across California. And the Office of Administrative Law has approved that, and it will be going into effect on January 1. And then just a comment here on the Safe Drinking Water Program. We are 5 years into the launch of that program, and as a result of that program and our ongoing efforts with the Drinking Water Revolving Fund and the Wastewater Revolving Fund, we've had $1 billion in grants since the launch, and over two, which is 2.5 times more than the previous 5 years. And so this program has really been helpful in helping us to close the gap on important projects that we weren't able to move forward on because of challenges with technical, managerial, financial capacity of these small failing systems. And so we're pleased that the people being served by failing water systems, the number has significantly decreased from 1.6 million to 700, a net gain in 900,000 Californians that now have safe and affordable water. And of course, we have a long way to go. And we're just really highlighting this because the program concludes in 5 years. And we think that there is a strong case for continued funding of this very important program. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much for the very thorough report. I'm interested in the upcoming news that we might be hearing on the Delta. But thank you again. And I'll open it up to the board for any questions or comments. All right. Seeing none, we just wish you a safe and happy weekend. And thank you again for joining us and for your service to the State Board.
Thank you. Good to see you all.
Good to see you, too. Take care.
Too.
All right, we'll move on to item five. And this, I'd like to request a motion and a second to approve our board meeting dates for 2025.
Can I make one comment? The very first board meeting date that's in the calendar, we have one board member that cannot make the January 31st. So I'd like to see if there's a possibility of February 14th being a good date for our first board meeting.
Show the love to the water board. I can do the 14th, yes.
No. Okay.
I know.
I'll bring chocolate
too, yeah.
Yeah, being that we'll love to be here that day.
You would love.
I would love to be here.
Well, I'll bring our hearts and come, yes, so that's good.
That date currently works for me. I have a whole, but I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
I said that date should be okay for me. I tentatively have a hold on it, but I think I'll be okay.
Okay, great. Then yes, well. So with that change for February 14th for the first meeting, I'd like to request a motion and a second for the calendar.
I will make the motion
second
for the calendar as amended.
Second.
Moved by Board Member Rue, seconded by Board Member Lopez. Jessica, please call the roll.
Lord Nender Lopez.
Aye.
Lord Nender Alvarado.
Yes.
Lord Nender Clark.
Aye.
Lord Nender Rue.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora.
Yes.
Chair Nuri.
Aye. And the item passes. All right. Moving on to item six, we will select a committee, appointment of a committee to nominate regional board officers for 2025. Jane, do you have any feedback on this one?
I do. We have a couple of board members that have volunteered. So it's Board Member Lopez and Board Member Rue.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you both for your service. With that, I'll request a motion and a second to appoint and nominate our committee to select the office.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to that effect.
Second.
All right. Wonderful. Moved by Board Member Rue, seconded by Vice Chair Scandura. Jessica, please call the roll.
Lord Nender Lopez.
Aye.
Lord Nender Alvarado.
Yes.
Lord Nender Clark.
Aye.
Lord Nender Rue.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora.
Yes.
Chair Nuri.
Aye. And the item passes. Item seven is approval of the meeting minutes for the September 13th, 2024 board meeting. I'd like to request a motion and a second for this item.
I'll make a motion as presented.
I'll second.
Motion by Board Member Rue, seconded by Board Member Clark. Jessica, please call the roll.
Lord Nender Lopez.
Aye.
Lord Nender Alvarado.
Yes.
Lord Nender Clark.
Aye.
Lord Nender Rue.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora.
Aye.
Chair Nuri.
Aye. And the item passes. We'll move on to item eight, which is consideration of the consent calendar listed as items 9, 10, 11, and 12. At this time, I'd like to ask if there are any interested persons or board member requests to remove any consent items. Seeing none, I would like to request a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion as for the consent calendar as presented today.
Thank you. I will second.
All right, wonderful. Moved by Board Member Ruth, seconded by Board Member Alvarado. Jessica, please call the roll.
Lord Nender Lopez.
Aye.
Borton under Alvarado?
Yes.
Borton under Clark?
Aye.
Borton under Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Yes.
Chair Murray?
Aye. And the item passes. Now we'll move on to item 13. This is the time and place for the public hearing on the Santa Ana Water Board's 2024 through 2027 Triennial Review of the Water Quality Control Plan for the Santa Ana River Basin, also known as the Basin Plan. Claudia Tenorio, Senior Environmental Scientist and Supervisor, will discuss the Triennial Review of the Basin Plan. I'd like to ask Claudia to please step forward and give her presentation.
Morning. Alrighty. So, good morning, Chair Murray and members of the board. My name is Claudia Tenorio. I'm a senior environmental scientist, and I'm the supervisor of the Regional Planning Program section. And today I'm going to be presenting on and recommending for adoption the Basin Plan Triennial Review for the years 2024 through 2027. And I'd actually presenting an informational item at the July board meeting about the triennial review. Next slide. So these are the topics that I'm going to be covering today. First, starting off with a quick overview of the basin plan, the purpose of the triennial review, a discussion on the proposed list of priority projects, comments received during the triennial review, staff recommendations, and then end with questions. Next slide. So a little background on the basin plan. The Water Quality Control Plan for the Santa Ana River Basin, or the Basin Plan, is a water quality control planning document. It contains regulatory provisions to protect water quality and beneficial uses of the Santa Ana region's ground and surface waters. The Basin Plan prescribes beneficial uses, water quality objectives, as well as implementation strategies and timelines to meet those water quality objectives and protect beneficial uses. Next slide. Okay, so what is the purpose of the triennial review? The triennial review consists of soliciting comments on water quality issues, then will later be put into a work plan and put into a priority list of actions that staff will take during a three-year period to either investigate or respond to those issues. The triennial review also ensures that water quality standards and the basin plan are based on current science, methodologies, and guidance. The basin plan also helps staff identify necessary updates or revisions to water quality standards and other elements of the basin plan. And then lastly, as part of the triennial review, staff identify issues and projects that will then be, could lead to subsequent basin plan amendment projects. And then in the next few slides, I will be providing an overview of the projects that have been identified as high priorities for the region. Next slide. Okay, so project number one that's been identified as a priority for the region is the copper total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, for Newport Bay. So Newport Bay is considered an impaired water body due to dissolved copper. And in December of 2022, the Santa Ana Water Board adopted the copper TMDLs for Newport Bay. However, in order for those TMDLs to be in effect, it requires several approvals. So during this triennial review period, staff will work to present the copper TMDLs to the State Water Board for approval, as well as once that occurs, staff will submit the administrative record to the Office of Administrative Law, or OAL, and US EPA for approval. And then most of the projects that I'm going to be discussing today, if they are approved by the board, they require several approvals. Most of them will require State Board approval from OAL, as well as EPA. Project number two is a basin plan amendment to revise the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake nutrient TMDLs. Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake are both considered impaired water bodies due to nutrients. And the Santa Ana Water Board adopted TMDLs for both lakes in 2004. Staff have been working for the last few years in collaboration with the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL Task Force to revise the TMDLs to take into account changes in the watershed due to changes in land use for the San Jacinto watershed, as well as new water quality regulations and improved water quality models and new information that has been gathered since the TMDLs were adopted 20 years ago. And Santa Ana Water Board staff anticipate bringing the revised TMDLs for board consideration in the first quarter of 2025. Ready, next slide, please. Alrighty, project number four is a basin plan amendment to extend the wet weather condition compliance date for the Middle Santa Ana River Watershed TMDLs. So the Middle Santa Ana River is considered an impaired water body due to exceedances in fecal coliform objectives in the basin plan. During storm events, wet weather conditions, there's a spike in indicator bacteria concentrations in the Middle Santa Ana River. So currently there is a TMDL in place for the watershed that includes a wet weather compliance date of December 31st, 2025. To date, that wet weather condition, the conditions have not been met. So staff have received a request from the Middle Santa Ana River Task Force to extend the compliance date for a period of 20 years. The extension would be required to develop necessary strategies to develop necessary strategies to meet the wet weather conditions. And as part of that extension, if approved, would require certain tasks and schedules that need to be met during that 20-year period. Project number four is staff will consider separating the shellfish harvesting and water contact recreational uses from the Newport Bay fecal coliform TMDLs. Newport Bay is considered impaired for fecal coliform as well. And the Newport Bay fecal coliform TMDLs address impairments with the shellfish harvesting or shell and water contact recreational beneficial uses. So as part of this project, staff will consider separating those sections, so the shell section and the Rec 1 section, from the TMDLs, which will result in a TMDL for shell and one TMDL for the Rec 1 beneficial use. And the intent of separating those beneficial uses from the TMDL would be to incorporate different monitoring schedules, as well as using different indicator bacteria to protect those beneficial uses. And also, once that occurs, staff will also consider developing a site-specific objective for the shell beneficial use. Next slide. Okay, project number five is to incorporate all statewide objectives, plans, and policies into the basin plan. So this is intended to be, this is a non-regulatory basin plan amendment. As part of this project, staff proposed several revisions and updates to the basin plan to incorporate already approved statewide plans and policies. It also includes editorial changes to update and remove outdated information in the basin plan to better reflect the current conditions in the region. Project number six, and this is a long title, but project number six is a basin plan amendment to revise and clarify the compliance with salinity objectives for certain reaches of the Santa Ana River, as well as update the frequency of ambient water quality computation for groundwater management zones with a maximum benefit program. So staff are working collaboratively with the Basin Monitoring Task Force on this project. And in general, this project includes revising the definition of base flow conditions, as well as adding clarifying language on the applicability of salinity objectives, also adding language for flow-weighted annual averages, and also clarifying monitoring guidance for surface flows and frequencies along the Santa Ana River. Next slide. Project number seven is another basin plan amendment. This is to update the total dissolved solids and nitrogen salt management plan, specifically for the Chino Basin groundwater management zone. So this basin plan amendment will include modifying compliance metrics for recycled water and groundwater recharge, as well as enabling other recycled water suppliers to use the Chino North groundwater management zone to expand recycled water use and updating certain commitments for the Chino Basin. Project number eight, this is to consider the designation and a basin plan amendment to designate the commercial and sport fishing beneficial use. So there are potentially some waters in the Santa Ana region that are being used for recreational fishing, but have not been designated with the commercial and sport fishing or COM beneficial use. So as part of this, during this this trainer review period, staff will investigate and determine the appropriateness of designating those water bodies with the COM beneficial use to better assist staff in addressing pollutants that could be impacting recreational fishing. Next slide. All righty, project number nine is another project for designations, and this is to consider the designation of the tribal beneficial uses that Jane mentioned earlier. So this is the tribal tradition and culture and tribal subsistence beneficial uses, so known as COL and TSUB. So during this trainer review period, staff will engage and work with interested California Native American tribes to determine the appropriateness and investigate designating the coal and TESA beneficial uses. And then project number 10, during this trainer review period, staff will consider and investigate reinstating the minimum lot size requirements for new developments using on-site septic tank leaching systems. So as part of this project, staff will investigate the appropriateness of including a minimum lot size requirement into the basin plan, as well as reinstating the half acre minimum lot size requirements for new developments that propose to use on-site septic systems, as well as revising certain exception criteria for those new developments. Next slide, please. Okay, project number 11. This is somewhat related to project number 4, which is to separate the Shell and REC 1 beneficial uses. So once that occurs, once the if approved, separating the REC 1 and the Shell, staff will consider developing a site-specific objective for the Shell beneficial use. In order for this to happen, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. So during this trainer review period, staff will be reviewing work product that's coming out of the Shell study, as well as participating in work group meetings for that development of the site-specific objective. And then project number 12, which is the last project in the high priority list. It's not related to a basin plan amendment, but we did include it in the priority list because it reflects ongoing work with the basin plan. But this is a project to just ensure that our basin plan is the most up to date with the most recent adopted basin plan amendments, so that we have the most current version online. And then next slide. Okay, so like I mentioned, that brings me to the end of our high priority list, but I do want to mention that in addition to the high priority list, staff have also developed a secondary list of projects, which we're referring to the medium priority list. These are projects that were identified or issues that were identified as part of a review. However, they did not elevate to a level of a high priority just because of the high priorities and also available resources. To be completely honest, there's a lot of projects, and we have to try to prioritize those as much as we can. However, we did not want to ignore these projects that have been identified, so we have identified them in this medium priority list, and staff will work and monitor these projects and work on them as resources allow and as necessary. And the expectation is that as these high priority projects are being completed, these medium priority list projects will then move up in priority. Next slide. Okay, so comments received. Staff released a draft trainer review for public comment on March 29th. That included a 30-day public comment period, which we received during that time. We received a total of 3 comment letters. We received a comment letter from the US EPA, Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, as well as Orange County Public Works. And then all the comment letters that we received are part of the board package. On August 15th, the final proposed trainer review was released for a 45-day public comment period. And we received one additional comment letter from the County of Orange and Orange County Flood Control. And again, staff responded to those comments, and our response to comments document is part of the board package. Next slide. Okay, so continuing on with comments received, general comments in the comment letters were in support of our high priority items. We also did receive comments for recommendations to move some of the medium priority list items to the high priority list, specifically related to the Newport Bay sediment TMDLs. And our response to those recommendations are included in that revised response to comments document. Also, we received comments about available resources and PYs to be able to complete projects and get them through the finish line. And next slide. Okay, so then with that, staff recommend that the Santa Ana Water Board adopt the resolution to approve the trainer review. This includes approving the high priority list, the medium priority list, as well as the work plan. And then next slide. And then with that, this is my contact information. If there's any questions from the members of the public, they can reach out to me. They can also reach out to Kyle Fructuoso. He's from my staff that's assisting with the trainer review. And last slide, please. And then with that, we can open it up to questions.
Thank you so much. Very, very good reports, and thank you. At this time, I'd like to check to see if we have any public comments. Jessica, do we have any at this time?
No, there are not.
Okay, then I'd like to open it up to the board. Any, yes? Board Member Rue.
Yes, thank you for a very thorough report. I want to comment that I think you're on the right track as far as septic systems are concerned. The increasing the minimum lot size has everything to do with the fact that these septic systems fail. And if they fail, they're not getting into my neighborhood necessarily. And by doing so, I think you're making we're making an attempt to at least say you need to be responsible for the septic systems you put in. Rather, and you know, if you don't like this minimum lot size, then let's hook up to the sewer, because I think the better way to go is to hook up to the sewer. Long term, that's what's going to happen anyway, but I appreciate that thinking on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Rue. Yes, Board Member Lopez.
Thank you. That was one of my concerns. So anyway, thank you for addressing that. On Project 5, mm-hmm. you know, it says that you will incorporate statewide regulations. And, mm-hmm. you know, do you do that prior to all the others that may be in conflict or perhaps, you know, be revised? At what point do you actually implement the state?
So the statewide plans and policies are already in effect. So whether they're in the basin plan or not, they're already approved regulations or approved plans and policies. However, in order for them to be reflected in the basin plan, we have to go through a basin plan amendment project. So as far as there being like conflict with other basin plan amendments, those regulations are already in place. So what we're doing is just it's intended to be non-regulatory, because as part of that approval process from the State Water Board, they've already gone through that approval process and received all the approvals, and they're already effective regulation. But in order for them to be reflected in the basin plan, we have to go through an action to actually incorporate that language into the basin plan. So there shouldn't be any conflict with other basin plan amendments that we're working on, because they're already effective regulation.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Board Member Clark.
Thank you, and thank you for the comprehensive report. There's so many projects on the list. It's a lot of work to be done. So I applaud you all for being ambitious and trying to achieve the things that are necessary. Can you kind of just take us through the process of the items that are listed on the medium priority list? Like, how are those worked on? And do they eventually rise up to priority status in the next round, or are they worked on simultaneously?
So we'll work on those as resources allow. So our main focus is going to be on that high priority list. We've identified resources to actually work on those, and as part of the trainer review, we're going to investigate what additional information we need. I mean, some of them might not turn into basin plan amendments. We need to investigate the appropriateness of, you know, and what actions we need to take to address those issues. So we're not proposing to actively work on the medium priority list. However, if priorities change or something comes up, we will work on those as resources allow, and work with interested parties as it allows. So the expectation is that as we complete these high priority projects, these projects will eventually move up to the higher priority, but we're not proposing to actively work on them, because like you said, there's a lot of projects and we can't realistically complete them all.
That makes perfect sense to me. I'm glad you mentioned identified resources. So if there were like a grant or some new resources to become available, is there, an opportunity to reassess and allocate resources to maybe some of these medium
I think so. And also, you know, if our board, you know, one of the considerations we take is our board priorities. So if the board believes that something needs to be elevated or changed, you know, we can always take that in consideration. I think we all agree that sometimes priority change and we might have a plan and we might just need to sometimes change those priorities. So yes, if other resources become available or, you know, other issues come up, we can always reassess and change those priorities and, you know, work on those projects if we need to.
So, Member Clark, Claudia did a good job of laying out the purposes of the triennial review for good purposes. There's also a fifth, and that's transparency in the public space. And we've teed up way more work than we think we can actually accomplish in 3 years. But this is the menu that we can work from. And, you know, we've done our best to lay out the highest priority items. But those circumstances can change, and we'll continuously reassess what the most important things are. And the details in the proposals, that's exactly what we'll work on. So we'll sort that out as we go.
Thank you for the response. I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate just to get some information about how to respond to those who are advocating for items to be moved from medium priority to high priority, to have that response ready. And I think you all have outlaid it perfectly that, you know, we're already being ambitious in our high priority list, and we've already identified and allocated resources to attempting to, you know, accomplish all of those priorities. So, you know, trying to just add more on isn't realistic, but if needed, I think that's the response that we give to those who are advocating for other items. If priorities change, then there is flexibility there. So thank you for that.
Really, really good point. Thank you. Vice Chair Scandura?
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Claudia, for the presentation and also providing the answers to the questions that I sent to the executive officer earlier this week. So I really, really appreciate that. Just on a couple projects, I had a couple questions. Mm-hmm. On project number three, so the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL Task Force had proposed a 20-year extension of achieving the TMDLs, and of course they've already had 19 years to comply with that. Okay. We at the Water Board, particularly the Water Board staff, we don't accept that extension at this point in time, correct?
So, and then I have other staff here as well, Terry Reeder, she's more involved with the revision, but you know, the extension will come to the board for approval. So okay. Right now, staff, we've received a request from the task force, and the staff have requested that the task force provide a more robust justification as to why that 20-year extension is needed. So there hasn't been a commitment for us to approve that extension. We'll start working with that. The task force is required to submit further justification. And, you know, the extension might not be approved. You know, it will come to our board for that approval. So at this point, staff are still working with the task force for them to submit that justification as to why that 20-year extension is needed.
And I think that's appropriate that we ask the task force for that, you know, more justification. I do understand they're saying, well, there's problems where the best management practices aren't working out the way we wish they'd work out. We still have to design and build others. So, you know, that part I understand. But if there's any other ways that we can, even if we can't achieve the overall TMDL until 20 years from now, if there's other kinds of interim things that can be accomplished to help achieve that. Because one of the big things I looked at is that, you know, if we were to accept a 20-year extension, I'm surprised Coast Keeper isn't here because they're going to say, gee, well, you've already given them 20 years to comply with that TMDL. How come you're not taking enforcement action? You see, the optics are not real good on that. And I understand, you know, it's a little more complicated just to take enforcement action. So whatever we can do, and certainly we're going to look very carefully at the new compliance deadline for that for that particular TMDL.
Yep.
Another question, and this is sort of related to Project 3, but also medium priority project number, I think it was number 7. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was number 7, the Riverside County Flood Control District felt needed to be bumped into a higher priority. Now, Project 3, is, if I'm not mistaken, addresses wet weather flows, whereas Project 7, I believe, addresses dry weather flows.
So project number three in the high priority list is, I guess we can call it a limited revision. That project would only includes extending the compliance date. So that is what that project is. And as part of that revision, or that if approved, obviously, it would include certain tasks and an updated implementation plan that the task force and responsible parties have to take to meet the new compliance weather conditions. So, and as part of that project, there would be certain tasks that the task force needs to complete, for example, like a source analysis. So, and then project number 7 is to develop the site-specific objectives. So, you know, the extension is would allow additional time to determine what additional information is needed, possible funding to meet that wet weather condition, and from that extension and the work that's being completed as part of the extension, it would inform the appropriateness of developing the site-specific objective.
And then for the site-specific objective that they're talking about under Project 7, medium priority Project 7, would be for dry weather, or is it for both wet and dry weather?
I don't know, Terry.
I think that would be determined.
Okay. But it sounds like a lot of work is already going to be done under Project 3 to help achieve what they want to accomplish under Project 7, then.
Yeah. And so what Terry said for the people online is that, I don't know, Terry, if you want to come up here and say, maybe explain a little bit more.
We are leaving the door open on whether we would need site-specific objectives for both dry and wet weather, but we're also want to ensure that... Sorry. Sorry, Claudia, you're a little shorter than me. We're leaving the door open for consideration of site-specific objectives for dry and wet weather. However, obviously, there's a lot of work they need to do to demonstrate that they have the justification for developing site-specific objectives. And we don't feel that we're near where we need to be for that process.
Okay. Yeah, because I tend to agree with the Flood Control District that, you know, this, Project 7, you know, that does warrant priority. At the same time, having once been a manager in state government and having to constantly analyze staffing and resources and the work that's available, I understand that, you know, right now we have, you know, the analysis is our staff are basically tapped out on just those high priority projects. And then, of course, we have the fact that we're in a state budget crisis, so there could be some more, you know, hiring freezes or what have you. So, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I fully understand, you know, I understand what Riverside County is saying. At the same time, we've got some realities here. So I had a couple questions on Projects 4 and 11. So basically under Project 4, there's two steps to it. One, we're just going to simply separate out, you know, into two new TMDL shellfish and Rec 1 uses. And then the rest of Project 4 would be dedicated to developing a TMDL for the Rec 1 uses. And then, and also, I think, site-specific objectives based on Enterococcus as opposed to coliform.
Yeah, so as part of Project 4, it would be considering separating both uses. And then once that happens, our focus is going to be first on the Rec 1 beneficial use. And then as part of Project 11, we will consider site-specific for shell. So once that separation happens, the focus is going to be first working on the Rec 1 portion of the TMDL.
Right. Then under Project 11, we're not going to be able to get to a TMDL. I mean, we're hopefully going to get to a site-specific objective that then paves the way for a TMDL.
Yes, sir. The current objective for shellfish tissue is actually based on our water column number.
Right.
It's extremely low. It was established in 1925 for commercial shellfish harvesting, so we don't believe it's appropriate. We need to look at what something that's can be used both within the shellfish tissue and hopefully in the water column as well. We have studies ongoing. We completed a dry weather study. We've also completed a wet weather study. We're still waiting for the report from SCORP. So there's a lot more work to do on the shellfish. As you'll recall, back in June of last year, we asked for an 8-year extension for the compliance date for shellfish in order to complete those studies and develop site-specific objectives, and then that, well, hopefully we can do that in addition to developing the TMDLs in parallel.
Right, and I remember that meeting. I think we had it in Newport Beach where this whole issue came up, and the fact that, you know, we're using outdated standards to assess bacteria and viruses in shellfish. And So definitely appreciate that, and I recognize the fact that when you have one standard that's based on a water column, that the other standard's based on fish tissue, it's almost like trying to compare apples to oranges. My hope is that overall, at the end of the day, one standard doesn't lead to a higher load than the other standard, because at the end of the day, I think, you know, the sources of bacteria and viruses into whether it's the water column or shellfish tissue comes from the same source, you know, runoff, sewage spills, leaks, those kinds of things. So as long as, you know, one standard doesn't lead to more waste than the other. That's something that we'll look at down the road, I'm sure.
Yes, we certainly will. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. It's nice to have a technical expert up here, too, to ask some of those technical questions.
It took me some time to understand everything.
For those of us at the back of the class still learning some of the technical.
Yeah, a lot of patience on the EO's part.
Yeah. Claudia, thank you so much for not just your incredibly thorough report, but the breadth and scope of work that you and the staff and the entire agency are doing for this three-year plan. We know resources are tight, and but if there's ever an opportunity where we can help advocate for additional resources, please let us know, because that's part of our role as well. But thank you.
Thank you. And I have an action item.
Yep. The hearing is now closed. Unless there are any further comments or questions, seeing none, I'll request a motion to approve the tentative resolution R8-2024-0054. And a second of that.
I will make a motion for the item as presented this morning.
I'll second.
Moved by Board Member Ruse, seconded by Board Member Clark. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Board Member Lopez?
Aye.
Board Member Alvarado?
Yes.
Board Member Clark?
Aye.
Board Member Ruse?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
And Chair Nuri?
Aye. The item's approved. Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to item 14. This is the time and place for the hearing in the matter of administrative civil liability complaint R8-2024-0038 issued to the Wicked Creations proposing a mandatory minimum penalty of $7,376, including staff costs, for failure to obtain coverage under the statewide industrial general stormwater permit order number 2014-0057-DWQ. As amended. I am Chris Murray, Chair of the Santa Ana Water Board. Here with me are Vice Chair John Scandura and Board Members Leticia Clark, Bill Rue, Gloria Alvarado, and Al Lopez. The hearing is being conducted as a hybrid meeting with an option for the public to participate by Zoom. All board members, party representatives, and witnesses are physically present in the meeting room. Or will address the board via Zoom, the Zoom platform. The board is advised by Executive Officer Jane Joy and Lori Oaken, attorney for the Santa Ana Water Board. The advisory team has not had any substantive conversations regarding the issues involved in this proceeding with the prosecution staff or Wicked Creations. Members of the prosecution team, including Eric Lindbergh, Assistant Executive Officer Nick Amini, Supervising Water Resource Control Engineer Michelle Beckwith, Senior Environmental Scientist David Rosas, and David Rosas, Environmental Scientist, and Carson Capps, the prosecution team's attorney for the Office of Enforcement. Neither the prosecution team nor their attorney are advising the Santa Ana Water Board in this matter. The prosecution team is a party to this proceeding. Wicked Creations is represented today. Do we have a representative present?
I haven't seen anyone. Is there anybody here for Wicked Enterprises or on Zoom? They're not present.
Okay, we do not have, just for the record, we do not have a representative present in person or on Zoom from Wicked Creations today. The official record of the testimony at this hearing will be created by our court reporter. The hearing will also be recorded, but the recording will not be the official record of the hearing. At the end of this hearing, the Santa Ana Water Board will close the hearing in the matter and the board will deliberate. The deliberations may be in closed session. The Santa Ana Water Board will determine whether to affirm, reject, or modify the administrative civil liability as proposed in the complaint and adopt written findings of fact and conclusions of law. The advisory team did not receive any written comments from Wicked Creations or from any non-parties. No party submitted evidentiary objections. Having received no objections, the complaint, the prosecution team witness list, and all evidence listed in the prosecution team evidence list are hereby made part of the record. If you use any visual aids illustrating previously submitted evidence with your presentation, those will be made part of the record. No other documentary evidence will be accepted into the record unless the board makes a specific ruling to allow it. Have we received any speaker cards on this item?
No speaker cards.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. None have been received at this time. The hearing will be conducted in accordance with the final hearing procedure, and the order of proceedings will proceed as follows. The prosecution team presentation of evidence, a Wicked Creations cross-examination of prosecution team's witnesses, followed by a presentation of Wicked Creations evidence, if they appear during this hearing, prosecution team cross-examination of Wicked Creations witnesses, any rebuttal by the prosecution team, followed by cross-examination or additional rebuttal testimony by the Wicked Creations. Public interested persons, comments will be 3-minute time, will include a 3-minute time limit for each commenter, the prosecution team's closing statement, and then Wicked Creations' closing statement if they arrive to participate. Any party wishing to present an opening statement should do so at the beginning of their evidentiary presentation. The prosecution team and Wicked Creations each have 30 minutes for their presentations, cross-examination, and closing statements. The board members and the advisory team may ask questions of the parties and witnesses at any time. Time spent answering questions will not be deducted from the party's 30-minute time allotments. I will now administer the oath. If you intend to provide testimony on this matter, please stand and raise your right hand, or turn your camera on and raise your right hand if you're on Zoom. I will stand as well for purposes of formality. Do you solemnly state under the penalty of perjury that the evidence you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. All persons presenting testimony must state their name and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. Before we begin, does board counsel have anything she needs to address?
Two things. One, since Wicked Creations isn't here, rather than going through the whole order of presentations, I would suggest the prosecution team just give their opening statement and present their case. The board can ask any questions, prosecution team can give their closing statement, and then the board can move into deliberations. So you can dispense with the next page of the script.
Okay. All right. So with that...
But and one other thing. Yeah. The prosecution team's proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law will serve as the proposed order for the board to adopt. I do have a few minor corrections or changes to that that I'd like to read into the record. The first one is in the caption of the order, we would strike proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. The title of the document will just be order number R8-2024-0038. In the document header, it says Wicked Creations affirming order R8-2024-0038. Strike the word affirming. It's just order number. And then in paragraph 20, in the first sentence, just to correct a typo, it says the discharger, or it proposes to say the discharger violated the general order by failing to gain permit coverage. That should say failing to obtain permit coverage. In the next sentence, the one that says by adopting this order, strike that phrase so the sentence would start with the Santa Ana Water Board incorporates. And that would just be paragraphs 23 through 27 of the complaint. The rest of the allegations in the complaint have already been set forth in the order, so they don't need to be incorporated by reference. So the full sentence would read, the Santa Ana Water Board incorporates paragraphs 23 through 27 of complaint number R8-2024-038 as findings of the board and affirms the penalty specified therein. The next sentence, there's an insert, so it would say staff costs of $2,376 are enumerated. So the insert is of $2,376. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you for those edits. With that, we will proceed with the prosecution team, and then we will move with the shortened process since we do not have representatives from Wicked Creations present today. Proceed.
Great. Good morning, Board Chair Murray and board members. It's great to meet you all. I don't think I've met you. My name is Carson Capps, and I am counsel for the Santa Ana Water Board prosecution team, which includes Eric Lindberg, Nick Amini, Michelle Beckwith, and David Rosas, all from the Santa Ana Water Board. Today, we will be discussing the mandatory minimum penalty complaint for Wicked Creations. I'm going to provide a brief description of why we are bringing this order before you today, and then Mr. Rosas will provide further detail and present staff's recommendations. As is laid out in the evidentiary submissions and will be discussed further by Mr. Rosas during his presentation today, the discharger in this matter, Wicked Creations, is a metal fabrication company located in Garden Grove that has failed to enroll in the Industrial General Stormwater Permit. This has subjected them to an administrative civil liability under the Stormwater Enforcement Act of 1998, which is codified in the California Water Code as sections 13399.25 through .43. The penalty proposed by the prosecution team today is the mandatory minimum liability and is required to be imposed by the language of the act. In short, the prosecution team, and by extension, the board, does not have discretion in assessing this penalty. I will now call up David Rosas, environmental scientist with the Santa Ana Water Board, General Storm Water Unit, and the entire prosecution team will be available for questions at the end of his presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Board Chair Murray and members of the board. My name is David Rosas, and I'm an environmental scientist with the General Stormwater Unit for the Santa Ana Water Board. Today, I will be discussing the mandatory minimum complaint for Wicked Creation and present staff's recommendations. Next slide. The Industrial General Permit is a national pollution discharge elimination system permit under the Federal Clean Water Act. The Industrial General Permit regulates stormwater discharges and authorized non-stormwater discharges from industrial facilities in California. The goal is to improve water quality in the state by addressing the pollutants to stormwater discharges associated with industrial activities. These pollutants are carried to rivers, streams, lakes, and the oceans through stormwater and non-stormwater runoff and can threaten and adversely affect human health and the environment. Next slide. Attachment A of the Industrial General Permit outlines the facilities that are covered and are required to obtain permit coverage. On Attachment A, manufacturing facilities are listed as facilities that have a standard industrial classification or SIC code of 20XX through 39XX and 4221 through 4225. The X's denote multiple sequences within a range. Please note that the Industrial General Permit regulates over 500 different SIC codes. Based on information obtained from the City of Garden Grove and Wicked Creations webpage and YouTube channel, their industrial activities are best described as SIC code 3429, which is hardware not elsewhere classified, which falls within the 20XX through 39XX range. Next slide. The mandatory minimum penalty complaint was issued to Wicked Creations, hereafter known as the discharger, for $7,376 for failure to obtain permit coverage as required under the general permit for stormwater discharges associated with industrial activities, also known as the industrial general permit. Although the discharger could have received an administrative civil liability in an amount of up to $10,000, for each day of violation under section 13385 of the California Water Code, the prosecution team has chosen to pursue the mandatory minimum penalty. Next slide. The discharger operates a manufacturing facility identified on the map located at 13832 West Street in the city of Garden Grove. The facility is located in an industrial area of Garden Grove colored blue on the lower map. Next slide. This screenshot of the discharger's website identifies the facility as specializing in manufacturing medical vehicle parts or hardware, which is SIC code 3429. Per the U.S. Department of Labor, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, SIC code 3429 is titled Hardware Not Elsewhere Classified and is defined as establishments primarily engaged in manufacturing miscellaneous metal products, usually termed hardware not elsewhere classified. The description lists approximately 60 metal products that would be classified under this SIC code. As you can see from the discharger's website screenshot, Wicked Creation advertises their company as specializing in manufacturing or machining metal products. It should also be noted that there are currently 30 facilities statewide who have obtained IGP coverage under SIC code 3429, 12 of which are located within the Santa Ana Water Board's jurisdictional area. Next slide. The business license issued to Mr. Michael Boone lists the business as a metal fabricator or manufacturer of auto hardware. SIC code 3429 is included as a manufacturing facility in Attachment A of the Industrial General Permit, which would require Wicked Creations to obtain coverage under the Industrial General Permit. Next slide. The Stormwater Enforcement Act requires the regional boards to identify facilities who have not obtained the required permit coverage or who have failed to comply with reporting requirements as expressed in NPDES permits. For the types of violations covered by this act, the regional board issues two notices of noncompliance, which explain the violations and provide directions on how to correct the violations. Together, the two notices, as required by this act, give dischargers 60 days to come into compliance without penalty. If, after receipt of two notices of noncompliance and 60 days, the discharger has not corrected the violation, the act requires the regional board to issue a complaint for a mandatory minimum penalty. Next slide. Water Code Section 13399.30 outlines a specific process that the regional board must utilize to identify and notify noncompliant dischargers of their obligation to obtain permit coverage. If a discharger has not obtained their permit, the regional board must provide a first notice and 30 days to obtain permit coverage. The regional board must then provide a second notice to the discharger if permit coverage has still not been obtained. If the discharger obtains permit coverage within 60 days of the first notice, no liability is imposed. However, if the permit isn't obtained within 60 days of the first notice, the regional board must impose a mandatory minimum penalty. Next slide. Water Code Section 13399.33A1 requires the regional board to assess mandatory minimum penalties of no less than $5,000 for failure to submit the required notice of intent to obtain coverage. It also requires the regional board to recover staff costs associated with imposing the mandatory minimum penalty. Next slide. This timeline illustrates efforts made by Santa Ana Water Board staff to bring Wicked Creations into compliance with the Industrial General Permit. The timeline begins with an attempted inspection from Santa Ana Water Board staff and the City of Garden Grove. Staff hand-delivered the first notice of noncompliance to Wicked Creations employee with a deadline to obtain permit coverage by January 4, 2024. As shown, staff have made significant efforts spanning the course of many months. These efforts took the form of notices of noncompliance letters, phone calls, emails, and in-person inspections, or rather, attempted in-person inspections. These small unlabeled hash marks denote the phone calls between Santa Ana Water Board staff and the discharger. I will further explain those outreach efforts in the coming slides. Again, to date, Wicked Creations still has not submitted a notice of intent for permit coverage, and per their business license record with the City of Garden Grove, the discharger has been in business since at least 2014. Next slide. On December 6, Santa Ana Water Board staff issued a notice of noncompliance to the discharger. The notice informed the discharger that they were in violation of the Industrial General Permit due to their failure to obtain permit coverage. The notice had a deadline of January 4th to obtain permit coverage and stated that a failure to do so would result in mandatory minimum penalties. On January 4th, Santa Ana Water Board staff issued a second notice of noncompliance to the discharger because permit coverage was not obtained by the deadline specified in the first notice. The second notice reiterated the requirement to obtain permit coverage and gave a final deadline of February 3rd, 2024, to obtain permit coverage or that the mandatory minimum penalty would be assessed. Next slide. After the second notice was issued on January 25th, Santa Ana Water Board staff spoke with Ms. Ashley Miles, a facility representative for Wicked Creations. Ms. Miles stated that the number staff called was associated with Wicked Creations and the company was still operating. Staff explained the notices, reiterated the deadline, explained the mandatory minimum penalty, and again provided information on how to obtain permit coverage. Santa Ana Water Board staff conducted a follow-up phone call on January 29th and spoke to Ms. Esvidi Gomez, self-identified as the facility's receptionist. Ms. Gomez confirmed the phone number was for Wicked Creations. Staff informed Ms. Gomez of the notices, and Ms. Gomez was able to identify staff as the same staff who attempted to inspect the property in December. Ms. Gomez stated Ms. Miles would handle the issue and took down staff's information. Santa Ana Water Board staff again attempted to reach Wicked Creations via phone and left a voicemail reminding Wicked Creations to obtain permit coverage by the February 3rd deadline and that there would be a mandatory minimum penalty assessed if permit coverage was not obtained. Staff did not receive a return call. On February 2nd, Santa Ana Water Board staff called Wicked Creations and again spoke to Ms. Gomez, who confirmed that the January 29th message was relayed to Ms. Miles on January 29th. Staff reminded Ms. Gomez of the notices and deadline, and Ms. Gomez agreed to relay the information to Ms. Miles. On February 14, 2024, Santa Ana Water Board staff attempted to reach Wicked Creations via phone regarding the failure to obtain permit coverage and left a voicemail with staff's contact information. No return call was received. Next slide. On March 27, 2024, the Santa Ana Water Board prosecution team sent a conditional settlement offer to Wicked Creations, which identified alleged violations of the California Water Code and allowed the discharger to participate in the Santa Ana Water Board's expedited payment program for permit violations, but addressed the mandatory minimum penalty that must be assessed pursuant to Water Code Section 13399.31A1. The conditional settlement offer identified that Wicked Creations was required to obtain permit coverage under the Industrial General Permit, that they failed to do so by the prescribed deadline, and was therefore subject to the mandatory minimum penalty of no less than $5,000 plus staff costs for failing to obtain permit coverage within 60 days after issuance of the first notice of noncompliance. The discharger was given two options to respond to the offer. Either accept the expedited payment program offer by signing and submitting the acceptance and waiver form, as well as obtaining permit coverage by April 25th, 2024, or contest the violation by submitting in writing the basis of the challenge with supporting evidence by April 25th, 2024. On April 22nd and April 24th, Santa Ana Water Board staff left voicemails for Wicked Creations requesting a return call and reiterating the conditional settlement offer. Wicked Creations did not return staff's voicemails. On June 7th, 2024, Santa Ana Water Board staff attempted to perform an inspection of Wicked Creations as well as verify the permit status of the facility. From the public right-of-way, Santa Ana Water Board staff observed the discharger operating and conducting industrial activities. Ms. Miles again denied staff's request to conduct an inspection and verified that Wicked Creations did not obtain permit coverage. Ms. Miles claimed Wicked Creations never received enforcement documents, which was not true, and referred staff to contact her attorney. When asked, Ms. Miles did not provide the attorney's contact information. Ms. Miles stated the facility would obtain permit coverage but would not pay the mandatory minimum penalty. Next slide. On July 29, 2024, Santa Ana Water Board prosecution team sent mandatory minimum penalty complaint number R8-2024-0038 to Wicked Creations, which identified violations of the California Water Code. The complaint proposed an administrative civil liability in the amount of $7,376 as authorized by Water Code Section 13399.33A1. This monetary penalty differed from the conditional settlement offer due to the increased staff costs in developing the mandatory minimum penalty complaint. The complaint outlined today's public hearing, but also gave the discharger the option to waive its right to a hearing by completing an attached waiver. To date, Wicked Creations still has not obtained permit coverage under the industrial general permit. Next slide. The prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the proposed order and impose the mandatory minimum penalty of $7,376 on Wicked Creations. Thank you.
And we can skip two more slides to the end, and we'll save our closing statement for after questions from the board.
Thank you.
So does the board have any questions?
Thank you. Yes, Board Member Alvarado and then Board Member Lopez.
Just to clarify, you mentioned attempting or attempt to conduct inspections. So
when you... Board Member Alvarado, your microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I turned it on. So you you mentioned that staff attempted to conduct inspections, and only at the last inspection attempted, you said that it was denied. Staff was denied. Was that the practice that they actually did from the beginning when staff showed up?
Yes. David Rosas, environmental scientist. We were denied for both inspections to access the property by Ms. Miles.
Any specific reason?
Well, stated.
Just yes. Basically no, or?
Stated that the owner wasn't present and she was unfamiliar with our agency for the first one, and then the second one was familiar with the process but did not want to allow staff out of frustration at the process.
Okay, and I have to just comment on something. You know, staff takes time to do all this, to keep, and I really like the comment that was, you know, made in the opening statement. It affects human health, natural environment, and we're trying to safeguard exactly that. And so every attempt, every time we go out and we talk and inform and even actually physically turn in a notice, I think we have to take that into consideration when we make that decision. And thank you for being so thorough in the presentation.
Well said, yes. Board Member Lopez?
My question was, was there any local enforcement involved in this? Or is that another entity that we're not involved? Or it seems to me that city officials, local, they have restrictions and limitations on this. Was there any involvement in there?
Just that the city of Garden Grove did a joint inspection with staff during the initial inspection, and then also I've sent a couple emails to the city of Garden Grove getting their business license information and other information like that about the facility.
Thank you. Board Member Clark.
Thank you for the detailed account of all the activity. Kind of just curious about Ms. Miles. Did she ever represent herself as, a proxy for the owner or being able to speak on behalf of the business without the owner present?
Yes, Ms. Miles first identified herself as the facility receptionist, only for the facility receptionist later to identify Ms. Miles as the office manager, and at multiple times she said she had wanted me to talk with the owner and that she was only a facility representative, but would not put me in contact with the owner. Most of my calls and voicemails were an attempt to reach somebody other than Ms. Miles or Ms. Gomez, but I was unsuccessful.
Right. And it looks like there are different names listed on the permit. I do see an email address. Were there any emails sent to the actual owner of Wicked Creations? It looks like mike@wickedcreations.com.
The only email was to the Wicked Creations email that was posted on their website. So no email was sent to specifically Mr. I believe Boone.
Mike. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. At this point, you were never actually able to contact the listed owner of the company. So we don't even know if they know all what's going on. Do we have any confirmation that the owners actually have knowledge of the letters, know about the hearing? The owners listed on the permit, I guess.
Wicked Creations has retained an attorney, and I've talked to him as recently as Wednesday.
Okay.
So they're aware of it.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that confirms it. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Okay, with that, I'll bring it back to the board. Again, no representation here from Wicked Creations, given that they're not present. If you'd like to proceed with a closing argument, then we can have the board deliberate and make its determination.
So, in closing, the discharger in this case failed to enroll in the industrial general permit. After this, they denied Santa Ana Water Board staff access to their site for inspections on multiple occasions. In addition, the discharger failed to respond to many outreach efforts by the board staff, including a settlement offer to resolve this without expending further resources by bringing it before the board today. After the complaint was issued, the discharger failed to timely submit evidence, briefs, or objections pursuant to the hearing procedures governing this matter. Enrollment in generally applicable permitting regimes, such as the industrial general permit, is important for a variety of reasons, including preventing unfair business advantages for those who do not enroll, providing valuable monitoring and reporting information to the regions, and requiring implementation of minimum BMPs in order to protect the water quality of the region. This is especially vital in our region, which has one of the highest numbers of enrollees in the IGP throughout the state. The discharger has demonstrated disinterest in participating in the regulated community at every juncture in this enforcement proceeding. Further, as of today, they have yet to obtain industrial general permit coverage. The prosecution team, as discussed previously, opted to enforce this violation under the Storm Water Enforcement Act for the mandatory minimum, because that is generally how the region proceeds, considering the volume and relative simplicity of these violations. We recommend that the board adopt the order as amended today. In light of how obstinate the discharger has been, there is potential for the region to pursue further enforcement for additional violations not discussed today, but that is subject to the region's enforcement prioritization and enforcement goals. Thank you for your consent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all who participated in this matter. With that, and given that there is no one present from Wicked Creations, if there's nothing else, we will close the record of this hearing. Pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C3, the board may go into closed session to deliberate on this matter, or we can deliberate in open session. So what is the purview of the board? I'm personally ready. And I just like to echo, because I didn't speak earlier, Board Member Alvarado's comment. This is a matter of public health, and for people to flagrantly disregard the rules that keep everybody safe is truly unacceptable from my personal perspective as a chair and member of this board and representative of this agency. So I just want to thank our staff for being so diligent and thorough. You've definitely approached this from a fair and very, again, just a thorough standpoint. Every opportunity was afforded, including the opportunity to present here today, and they continue to disregard the process and the importance of it. So with that, I am prepared to proceed if my colleagues are on the board, and I'll just ask for a motion and a second if you would like to proceed.
Madam Chair, I would like to proceed. I will make a quick comment, though. I concur with what Board Member Alvarado said. I also look at something where as a corporation, they were given multiple opportunities to apply for the general permit. They didn't. It's not as if we said to them, we're bringing the hammer down now. We gave them several opportunities to apply for the general permit. We did everything we could, and it's come to this point. So I don't know where my colleagues want to go with this. I would just make a motion for staff recommendation.
Including the changes I read into the record at the beginning of the hearing.
So moved by Board Member Rue. Thank you for that. A second, please.
I'll second.
Seconded by Board Member Clark. Jessica, would you please call the roll for the adoption of staff's recommendation with the amendments laid out by our council?
Board Member Lopez?
Aye.
Board Member Alvarado?
Aye.
Board Member Clark?
Aye.
Board Member Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scandora?
Aye.
Chair Nuri?
Aye. The item passes. Thank you so much again for all of your work and diligence.
Thank you.
Okay, having concluded item 14, we'll move on to item 15, which is our executive officer's report.
I don't have any report this time.
With that, we will move on to board member and executive officer communications, item 16. So I'll start to my far right, which is Board Member Lopez.
I don't have any comment. However, I just wanted to make a notation of the minutes, the page, I don't know, page 9, that I really like that statement that Chair Murray made. I think it's very inclusive, it just takes it all in. And I think that kind of statement should be pretty much put on every page that goes out, you know, regarding the MS4, you know, as a, you know, kind of like, this is what we're doing, this is what we took place, and, you know, I commend you on that.
Yes, Board Member Alvarado.
Well, I just want to say thank you to the staff. Thank you again for keeping us informed and for doing such a good job out there. Keeping us safe and making sure that our water is safe and that we're able to thrive and our environment also is safe. With that, I just want to say thank you once again for all the work and thank you for the opportunity to serve. Happy holidays. We will see you next year. Thank you.
Board Member Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentations today. I'll echo just thanks to staff for being so thorough and professional. It really makes our jobs easier. I want to report really quickly on, I attended the Newport Bay Watershed Executive Committee meeting. John actually represents us from this body, and I represent on that board from Tustin. But a key presentation was about microplastics in the waters, which is very interesting. I've been hearing a lot more about it lately, and I happened to meet with Senator Blake Spear yesterday, and she was mentioning a bill that she was really proud of getting signed by the governor, SB 1053, which officially bans plastic, single-use plastic bags from grocery stores. We tried to do that 10 years ago, and we kind of got that thicker plastic bag implemented that's supposed to be recyclable and reusable, and the reality is that many people don't reuse them, maybe once or twice, but not with the intent that was there. So now that ban is there, which will help eliminate those microplastics that we're seeing in our water. But just hearing a lot more about that, it seems like folks are becoming much more hyper aware about how these microplastics are in our food and our water, and we're consuming, you know, large amounts of them. And so I just feel honored to be able to serve on a board like this where we're trying to address these really important issues. And I just wanted to give Senator Blake Spear a little bit love of, you know, being able to pass that major legislation this last session. So happy holidays to everyone as well. Be safe and be well. Thank you.
Board Member Rue.
Thank you. I will echo what my colleague Leticia said. The amount of plastics going back into the water since they passed Well, the voters passed the bit about paying so much for a bag. It's increased 55% since then, so no one is really even trying to reuse the bags. It's also probably not healthy, too. So this is a good bill. I'm glad the governor signed it. I want to really thank IEUA for letting us use this facility today. I had the opportunity a few weeks ago to sit with the board president, Marco Tulli, on a few items I was talking about, not related to this specifically, but some other things. And he and I talked about how this is truly one watershed. We're tied together. There seems to be at times sentiments that we have three different counties, so each one needs their own representative. No, we represent the watershed, not one specific county, not one specific city, not one specific neighborhood. We represent the entire watershed because it is that interconnected. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that we don't have jurisdictional boundaries for our counties and our cities, but rather look at this as one unique opportunity to help something in our watershed, which is shared equally with every county and, in fact, ties into the other regional boards across the state. So I'm proud of that. I appreciate the leadership of President Tulli and this board and his board. I appreciate their cooperation with us. And for many, many years, going back to when I was first on this board, eons ago, when the covered wagons came through, we've worked with them very well, and they are integral to the entire region. I also want to say happy holidays to everybody. We won't be meeting again until February. And, of course, if something comes up in the meantime, we're available. But I appreciate everybody. Take time to just appreciate the people around you, your family around you. Be thankful even for the tiny little things, because at this time of year, they're magnified more. And peace to everybody.
Thank you, Board Member Rue. Vice Chair Scandura.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. I did attend the Upper Newport Bay Committee meeting along with Board Member Clark, and I don't have anything else to report other than what Board Member Clark mentioned. Yesterday, I had a chance to participate in Orange County Water District's annual groundwater adventure tour. That's where they take everybody around to show the groundwater replenishment system, the recharge beds in the Santa Ana River, and then also the Prado Dam wetlands. Along with me came a number of people from our own agency, the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board, and it was an opportunity for me to get to know many of them on a personal basis, to learn about the work that they do and their backgrounds, and that was definitely a very special part of this tour, and as echoed by my fellow board members, so we're very proud that we have a very high quality, very professional staff here, and it definitely makes our job a lot easier. And then to echo my fellow board members, so we're going to have Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, MLK weekend, so all those holidays, and we'll see everybody on Valentine's Day.
I know. Thank you, Vice Chair Scandura. I'd just like to begin by sharing how honored I've been to serve as chair this year. Thank you for your support. I really do see this board as one big team. We're not just one watershed. We're one team representing in an advisory capacity the entire region, working with this incredible staff. Thank you, Jane and Lori and all of you for the work that you do day in and day out. You do make our jobs so much easier, but you also give peace of mind to everybody who lives and works in our region and are really upholding the highest standards of integrity to ensure public health. So thank you for that. I do want to wish everyone a very happy holiday. I can't believe we're not going to be back together until Valentine's Day. Definitely we'll chip in for chocolate on that day. But just God bless you all, to those we serve and to those listening at home and who are here. Thank you for your interest in what we do. It is technical, but it is so important, again, to the health and welfare of this region. So with that, I also want to just quickly say, again, thank you, IEUA, for hosting us today. Your facilities are gorgeous and beautiful. I hope more people visit and see this facility. And God bless, and have a great weekend, everyone. Take care. So with that, we can now adjourn the meeting. Our next date will be February 14th, 2025. Take care.